This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Well, free agency officially underway as of about 2 hours. Well, it's been going on for 3 days. We are in day three, and I'm bummed. I didn't think I'd be as disappointed as I was to learn that Earl Thomas was leaving, because it was a foregone conclusion. When free agency started, I would have said less than 1% chance that he comes back. Yet, maybe there was a slight glimmer yesterday afternoon, and he hadn't signed or agreed anywhere, and I talked myself into the idea that maybe there was a long shot, three-quarter court heave possibility, and he is going to Baltimore, and I found myself thinking that I'm going to miss watching him.
Yeah, look, I'm a fan of the NFL, and so I'm perfectly happy watching him play somewhere else, and I wish him nothing but the best. And, you know, I thought if they had extended him last year, that they would have got their money's worth. And this $55 million that Baltimore paid him, I think they're going to get their money's worth. I think he's going to continue to be the player that he's been. When he came back after that broken leg in 2017, he played his tail off, man. I mean, he did not miss a step. Bob and I were just talking about Michael Kendricks and how Kendricks is one of those players that's able to just step right in and play. And we have news on him, by the way. I'm kind of jumping the gun.
The Seahawks have agreed to terms with him. He is going to re-sign with Seattle. I believe it's $4 million for the 2019 season. So provided he's available to play, I love the return.
Yeah. Well, and there's some good and bad news there, too, because it may say something about how they treat KJ Wright and, you know, whether or not he leaves. And but, you know, I kind of feel sorry for Bobby if KJ Wright doesn't get signed, because, you know, he'll be the last one that's left on that, those great defenses. But look, that time moves on. That was a while ago. And Earl, I think, is going to be one of those guys that can play into his mid-30s and still be incredibly effective. So good for him. The other good news with him is that he came back. He didn't miss any money like Le'Veon Bell, who didn't want to sign. He's getting a little bit more than the franchise tag now. And, you know, he missed out on that $14 million. It was just silly. So at least Earl reported he got his $8 million last year. He's going to get 55, 32 of it is guaranteed. And I'm going to enjoy watching him play. But it was time to move on. It was just time to move on. I think, you know, he's the last Legion of Boom. You know, there was that one sort of rotating, which Shaquille Griffin is now part of, the cornerback. But, you know,
it was the those Spinal Tap drummer.
Yeah, that's right.
The right cornerback was the Spinal Tap drummer, right? The left corner was Richard Sherman. The right cornerback was Brandon Browner, then Byron Maxwell, then Shaquille Griffin. They had
was
a
rotation. Shedd in there?
Shedd was in there for a few games. We had Walter Thurmond at one point was slotted to go in there. Yeah. It was the Spinal Tap drummer. They just kept swapping him out.
That's right. Yeah, but he didn't self-combust into a little green globule.
Right, or choke to death on vomit. Not his own. Which was another cause of death.
I don't know if
you can
dust
drummer.
For vomit, but yeah, they found out it wasn't his vomit. But yeah, it's sad. I think I think most Seahawk fans, and texted in 710-710, how you feel about it? Are you okay with Earl moving on? Look, I'm like, it's been fun. It was great having him here. I've enjoyed covering him, but it was time to move on. It's time to get the next group in there, and you know, and Tedrick Thompson being that guy. And yesterday, I think maybe Jim sort of mischaracterized my evaluation of Tedrick Thompson is that he is going to be a good player. He's a really good tackler. He's a better hitter than Earl. But, you know, I don't know about covering the ground. He made some mistakes. There were some missed tackles, but I think he's going to develop into that kind of player. It was really his first year getting to play at all. So, you know, and you know, some guys take a leap in their second year, some guys take a leap in their third year, and I think it's going to be the third year for Tedrick Thompson. So it was just time to move on from Earl Thomas. He was going to get that amount of money. I always got the feeling that the amount of money and the guarantee was a source of pride for him. And I'm not saying that Earl is all about the money. Money is a representation of your skill level and how much people respect. And we know that NFL players, and look, Earl's already made like $55 million with the Seahawks. So it's not about money. It's about what that money represents. And for him, and I think for a lot of players, it's about respect.
It's about scorekeeping. It's a way to, not for the actual utility that the money provides, but a way to show, this is what my skill has merited in a business transaction. That's how I'm valued in this league. I do think that the money was a priority for him, not because of what he could buy with it, but right. because of what it said about his skill level. This feels different for me than it did when Richard Sherman was signing with the 49ers. When Sherman signed with the 49ers, I really felt like, man, I hope Russell absolutely throws three touchdown passes against him. I wanted to see Sherm get burned. Earl is going to be a different feeling for me. Maybe it's because he's in a different conference, the fact that he's playing for Baltimore, but the Ravens are coming here next season, and this is much more... I feel a little more wistful about this one, and maybe it's because Earl was such an offbeat character that even the things that he did that for some fans were unforgivable, like shouting to the Cowboys coach or going into their locker room after the game in 2017, or the flipping off the Seahawks bench as he was carted off.
Or saying he wasn't going to practice even if he had a headache.
All of those things I felt were kind of lovably eccentric and consistent with who he was. He's just a different person.
Yeah, and it's amazing how personalities are so different, because had Richard Sherman, to your point, done any of those things, it would have been he could possibly be the most hated ex, you know, Seahawk ever. And, you know, and there was just something, I always got the feeling with Earl that somebody else was driving the ship. It wasn't, you know, necessarily what he wanted to do. It just is something that just came out of him. And I think for that reason, a lot of people have been willing to forgive him. It's interesting. What if that had been any other player that had followed Jason Garrett into that locker room? Think about it. What if it was Russell Wilson? Oh my gosh. I mean, if it was, you know, and Richard Sherman, I think it would have been seen as being some kind of, you know, really underhanded sort of low blow, and Sherm had plenty of those on the way out. That's the one thing about Earl, though, and this is where, you know, why I think it's more forgivable, is because he never really said anything. The only thing he ever said about his teammates or coaches was the one time he tweeted, and once again it came off as if he were just being innocently, you know, asked a question, and he thought that maybe Bobby Wagner shouldn't have been playing in that game. I don't know why he did that. I don't think that's his business to say that. And I think that Bobby Wagner's reaction was justified. But other than that, I mean, he didn't take shots at Pete Carroll. He didn't say anything about the Seahawks. I know he flipped off the sidelines, but that was during the heat of the moment. He was injured. So, yeah, it's interesting how personalities can totally change, because, like I said, if you plug anybody else into those situations and they did that kind of thing, Bobby Wagner, anybody like that, you would have been like, wow, that's really insubordinate. Whereas with Earl, it just kind of came off as, like you said, the lovable sort of crazy uncle.
Earl Thomas is kind of like the Dos Equis guy.
If there was a street named after him, Eli Manning would never be able to pass it. He's been able to count all the way to infinity twice. He's so brave that he doesn't even fear itself.
As the great warrior poet Earl Thomas once said,
I don't know what trepidation means.
He is the most interesting safety in the world.
That's awesome.
We're going to play some of those that we put together. I've always loved Earl as a player, and I've thought he's an intriguing and really, really just a unique personality in a league where players are becoming more and more the same. So this is a day, and it is, in some ways, it's the last of one of the last members of a great defense of this team's first championship game, or first championship team. So as he goes to Baltimore, that's added. He's one of six guys that have now signed with other teams. We have Michael Kendricks, who's been retained, and Jason Myers. Jason Myers. The Seahawks went and signed a kicker, which I'm happy to report means no more spoiled milk. We do not have spoiled milk in the fridge. We don't have to check expiration dates. The milk is fresh.
Okay, for the time being.
That's correct.
Because we've seen good kickers go haywire.
That's correct. But this is best used by date right now is September 16th, 2019. Mm-hmm. We got milk that's going to be good for at least 8 months.
Well, I was on the phone with Clayton this morning, and did you watch him during camp? I'm like, no, John, of course I didn't watch the kicker during camp. And Clayton claims he never saw him miss, which I'm sure he saw that. But, you know, I felt like Sebastian Janikowski was maybe the more solid proven kicker at the time. I don't know why. I feel like if they'd have kept Myers, that he would have had the bad season.
Really?
Yes.
You thought it was bad juju?
Yeah. Is so, there something wrong with the mojo going around?
No, yeah. I think the problem was they had spoiled milk in the fridge, and it was one of those. Oh, I think it's good. I think we could still get. Maybe we could use it as buttermilk in pancakes. No, it was all bad. Throw out the spoiled milk. Jason Myers is coming here, and Michael Kendricks, who showed last year, he was able to plug in right away. Now there's still some uncertainty about his availability. I feel very strongly that he is going to be available when training camp opens. Any punishment, he's got a sentencing hearing that is coming up in April, and we'll see what that means for the insider trading case against him. But Michael Kendricks has come back, and the league in general, this free agency period, every year we talk about how much money gets spent and how much. There's a lot that's happened. I can't believe the Giants traded Odell Beckham Jr. for that. I completely don't understand what the Giants are doing unless they are an abject rebuild. If they are, we're going to get as many picks as we can, and we're going to tank the 2019 season, why would you trade him?
Yeah, maybe because you're tired of his antics.
Man, but why did you extend him a year ago then? They gave him a $20 million check last year.
They made a mistake.
Oh, God.
Dave Gettleman, the GM, says, we have a plan. So we'll see, and that's going to take a couple years to. I heard a couple of reports about him. One was that he went to Eli Manning's house and like played with his kids and had dinner and stuff like that. And
I thought you were going to say he went to Eli Manning's house and egged it.
Yeah,
they're like, all right, he's got to go now. We're not going to have that kind of behavior around here.
He had dinner with the family and everything, so you know he's probably not as bad as everybody thinks. But still, I feel like that was the Giants moving on from. From that, and they want to rebuild, and they want to get younger, and that's the thing. That's the formula is, you know, if you can get kids that are in that first 4 years, you're not going to be paying through the nose for, you know, it seems like there's no real middle class. Although Michael Kendricks signed for what, $4 million. Don't you think that's an indication, to change the subject really quick, but don't you think that's an indication that he's probably not going to jail?
I think so. But then again, I know that Pete last year was adamant about thinking he shouldn't have been suspended for as long as he was and was really upset at that. So the Seahawks have tended to err on the side of being overly optimistic about his availability.
Yeah, and maybe that's the case, but I wouldn't think that they would do that without. It also might speak to what they think is going to happen with KJ Wright now. And this is one of those, you know, sort of good news, bad news things, is that the bad news is KJ's got a knee problem, and I don't know what it is, and we haven't heard exactly what it is. I've had every kind of knee problem, so I can relate to it, but I'm not sure what is going on with his. And you know, that may indicate, you know, I thought maybe it indicates that KJ Wright's going to get signed for some of these ridiculous numbers, but maybe his knee will keep him from doing that. So, we'll see what happens there. I like the Kendricks signing a lot. Bob Stelton and I were just talking about it. He's a guy that there's lots of players that it takes them a while to get going. Sheldon Richardson, he talked about that when he got here. It took him 3, 4, 5 games, which was kind of surprising to me just because defensive tackle, it's not like super complicated, but it took him a while to get going. Jimmy Graham, same thing. Kendricks is a guy that just plugs right in and he's ready to go. And he plays with a certain kind of energy, kind of like Frank Clark, where there's just this fast twitch, always in motion type of style of play that I really love seeing. So, and we saw like in the Chicago game, he just popped right in there, was making plays all over the place. And so, yeah, that's a good move for them. But I'm wondering if that's any indication of what KJ Wright is going to do next year.
I'm glad you brought up Sheldon Richardson. And we're going to have we're going to talk to Kadri Ismail. That's going to be coming up a little bit later about the impact that Earl Thomas is going to have on the Ravens and what we'll see there. That's coming up at 3:30. I'm glad you brought up Sheldon Richardson. He is the player that most clearly embodies what is happening in this free agent market, because he was acquired in a trade. The Seahawks acquired him in a trade 2 years ago.
For Curse.
It was Curse and a second round pick for Sheldon Richardson. And he was a potential candidate to be re-signed and seen as a really, really valuable cog going forward. In his one season with the Seahawks, I don't think he played poorly, but Seattle wasn't enamored with him because he signed for a relatively affordable one-year contract in Minnesota last year that I believe was about $7 million. Might even been a tick south of that. This free agency period, he 3-year contract worth up to $39 million. So he almost doubled his annual average from the one-year deal he took with the Vikings. And did he become that much better player? I would argue that this is about there being more money out there. And more money plays to the benefit of the guys who get to the market. And the really strange thing about the NFL is that their salaries, the biggest impact on salaries is actually made by good players, not great players. The good players, and Sheldon Richardson's a good player, they're the guys that get to the free agent market. Mm-hmm. The great players never sniff it because they're either extended before their contracts expire, or if they're going to expire, they get a franchise tag placed on them. Sheldon Richardson, the fact that his salary has bloomed like that, I think says everything about how much more money is out there.
Well, and then a lot of it's just luck and timing, and, you know, or where a team happens to have a certain amount of money. And so it makes you wonder, though, with this free agent period, if there are agents that are giving guys advice that, hey, it's not so great to be locked up in some long-term deal, especially with the salary cap going up and you see the numbers flying around right now. And there's going to be a lot of, and the market is imperfect. And that's where I think if you're an agent, you need to coach your player up. You need to say, hey, look, you're going to see, I guarantee you, you're going to see players who are not as good as you getting a lot more money than you're getting. And it's all because of the timing and, you know, and sometimes it's guys' willingness to take a shot on themselves and say, hey, I'll gamble my future and, you know, guaranteed money to go out and hit a market and possibly catch one like this, where there's going to be, by the end of the year, we're going to be looking back at this going, remember how much that guy signed for? And, you know, there's going to be guys balling out that are getting half or less money. And I think it's just one of those years where somebody brought this up in the sports pit. I don't know if it was Salk or you, but is this free agent, or maybe it was Mara, is this free agency period more exciting than the draft is going to be?
It might be, because you've had some really big players change names. You've seen Le'Veon Bell bet on himself, not play a down of football this year, and sign a contract that I'm pretty sure he could have had something similarly sized with Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He certainly could have made $14 million last year. And Earl Thomas just got a bigger contract than Le'Veon Bell after playing in a season in which he suffered the kind of injury that Le'Veon Bell was worried about suffering, right?
Right.
He got hurt, and coming off of that injury, he still got a bigger deal than Le'Veon Bell. So I don't know if that sitting out strategically, I think Le'Veon Bell hosed himself. You see Odell Beckham going to Cleveland, which suddenly looks like a little bit of a powerhouse. And I would say this, of all the different things, I would fade the Cleveland Browns. I do not think the Cleveland Browns are turning the corner this year and going to be this, all their favorites in the NFC North or the AFC North. They very well might be. This does not tend to work out in football. When you assemble teams and buy teams, and the last time I remember a team making this kind of additions, it was the Philadelphia Eagles coming out of the lockout, and Vince Young made some sort of comment about people are calling us the dream team. And it wasn't, and they weren't a good team. And those sort of things, this does not tend to work out. And that doesn't mean long-term Cleveland won't be better off for it, but in the short term, I would bet the under on the Browns, because they've gotten so much attention and people have anointed them so quickly. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, you know, you see teams that benefit from the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they got to the AFC Championship game 2 years ago based on being terrible for 5 years, about the same period of time that the Seahawks were really good. They were terrible, and they were getting high first-round draft choices, and, you know, and they got to the AFC Championship game, but that's kind of what Cleveland is kind of looking like right now, that team. I think a lot of it's going to I'm not a huge Baker Mayfield fan. Maybe I'll be wrong about that. There's something about him. I don't like his leadership style. But, you know, we only saw him as a rookie. I just thought he's one of those guys that was kind of forcing himself into being a leader as a rookie, and he didn't handle that right. And there's something about that that just makes me wonder about him. But yeah, maybe you're right. They certainly are loaded, though. They got Garrett, the rusher, on the edge. They've got a good first round running back and Chubb. You know, they've got a lot of good players there. But, you know, that's just not the way the Seahawks are ever going to do that. You're never going to see them try to build some dream team. You're never going to see them going and chasing free agents, just because John Schneider's too good with the draft, and he does too good of a job getting young guys. And, you know, I just think when this whole thing plays out, and a lot of it depends on Will Dissly and his ability to come back from that injury, I think over the next couple of years, these drafts are going to be like, they're going to have a huge effect on this team.
It's Danny David Moore. Jim Moore is out sick today, which is disappointing for two reasons. First, I can't talk to him about Michael Kendricks coming back to the Seahawks and how he's going to be there on day one of training camp, which I'm really looking forward to. Mm-hmm. The second thing is to hear him talk about Earl Thomas's departure because he didn't want any part of Earl coming back, whereas I was tantalized by that possibility.
You don't think it's too bad that he's so sick and coughing that he can't be on the air? That's not number three?
Well, I'm worried about his instrument. Like, he's got to be able to talk to make a living, so he better take good care of that.
I want to talk about Jim's instrument.
It's time to take two.
Take two! In a riveting Pac-12 tournament, we'll start USC winning their first round game against Arizona. They will face UW tomorrow at noon.
Nervous, Danny?
I'm nervous.
They got some players.
They do have some players. This is the kind of team that Washington destroys. Those uber-talented, not disciplined. That's the kind of team that runs into a buzzsaw against them. I feel really good about how Washington will play tomorrow.
And this game's tomorrow, yeah. So, you know, you see what happened with Gonzaga.
That was great.
Getting beat by...
They
only scored 47 points.
Is Gonzaga on the bubble now? Because, I mean, that's typically a one-bid league, right? So, is it possible that they're going to be left out of the tournament entirely?
No. What is that, their third loss?
Well, yeah, maybe, but they didn't win their tournament. And that's usually... That should be... There should be a rule that only one school from that little... The weak sisters of the poor Catholic League gets to get in.
Well... Let's see. That's their third loss. What do you think their...
I'm just kidding.
I know, but what do you think their seat's going to be?
They're going to be a one seed. I think they'll still be seeded one. They play all comers. I give Gonzaga a hard time. Gonzaga deserves a ton of respect for how they schedule. It's not... Their conference is their conference, and they schedule all comers. They should still be a one seed.
And the Cougs. They're in it, too.
What happened to the Cougs?
They take on Oregon tonight at 8:30.
Let's go, Cougs!
Go, Cougs. I'm gonna have fun watching that game and rooting for the Cougs. I feel like they're a team that can jump up and, well, we saw it during the season. And they almost got the Huskies, too.
They did almost get the Huskies.
Out there in Pullman.
Took a putback. A putback by Noah Dickerson, right, on a Jalen Noel miss.
Yeah, that's my underdog team that I'm going to root for. Of course, I'm going to root for Stanford. Playing UCLA tonight, I think it's 6.
Yeah.
6 o'clock. But,
How come Stanford can't get better basketball players in? Is it too busy? The sailing coach is too busy mainlining recruits that they get cash for?
The coaches that are on the take are in the wrong sport, apparently. We've got the sailors. You just can't find a good sailor, Danny. You got to bribe.
What do you think
the coach?
Like, the scouting report is his knots are unbelievable on a good sailor. Well, you watch how the man reels in a spinnaker. You don't see that every day.
Yeah, part of me is kind of proud of Stanford.
At least they're cheating.
At least they're trying.
It is Danny David Moore. Earl Thomas is headed to Baltimore where, well, a guy that he looked up to really set the tone, set the stage, set the standard for safety play. We talked to Qadri Ismail about what to expect from Earl Thomas as a Raven next.
You're listening to Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's Danny David Moore here on the Venue Kings Hotline. We have Qadri Ismail, who does part of the radio broadcast for the Baltimore Ravens. And Qadri, you guys are getting one of the best players that I've seen and one of the best characters. What's the mood like in Baltimore over the acquisition of Earl Thomas?
Well, I will tell you this. Before the acquisition came about, I think the mood was a little sullen because of the fact that you have so many free agents leaving Baltimore. Eric Weddle, C.J. Mosley, Terrell Suggs, guys that you thought were going to be back to a defense that was the number one defense in the previous year. But I think with new general manager in charge, Eric DeCasse, he wants to go a little younger, but then at the same time recognize he's not going to overpay guys either, and he stuck to his guns. I think that he got a great deal with Eric Thomas, and so Raven Nation is feeling a heck of a lot better today with the news of Earl Thomas being a Raven.
Yeah, Qadri, I'll tell you what. Here, I'll give you a quote from Earl, because Jess kind of mentioned this, that one time he told us, well, we're playing on a string, but the string is in a box.
No, no, you can't put the string inside of a box.
You can't put the string in the box. Yeah,
sometimes you have to let the painting unfold by itself.
Yeah, little nutty, but man,
he's awesome.
This dude can play, and he's a good kid.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know when it comes to nutty, we had a nutty guy in Ed Reed, and at the same time, you know, he's about to be inducted into the, you know, Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I think when it comes to it, you know, Baltimore Ravens fans, they just love great football players, guys who are really passionate. And if they have a great quote, that's a bonus. But, you know, it's about what goes on the field and kind of like that swagger and leadership in the locker room. I think that's what Earl's going to provide.
Yeah, and Kadri, you know, just your perspective on having watched, this is the last member of the Legion of Boom to leave, but from you being a receiver, and just give us some perspective on what that defensive backfield with Earl Thomas looked like from Baltimore.
Yeah, I think, you know, number one, when you look at the Legion of Boom, and particularly knowing that we went up to Seattle, and I think it was one of those cases where you knew that you had to be on top of your game. You knew that you had to play a physical game. And if you were caught slipping, whether it be him, whether it be Cam, you know, it didn't matter. You were going to pay the price. And I think for Ravens fans, it was reminiscent of my 2000 team where we had an amazing defense, historical defense as well. And you know, you just kind of got a great appreciation for it. It's one of those things where, yeah, you know, you love to keep guys together and you love to, you know, have people play at a high level. But in this day and age with free agency and such, there's only but so much, you know, pie to go around for everybody. And you got to figure it out from a team standpoint. But from the way it was put together and orchestrated and the way they played, you know, it was quite remarkable.
We're talking to Kadri Ismail here on the Venue Kings Hotline. And Kadri, I'm glad you brought up Ed Reed, because I remember the Seahawks played the Ravens in 2011, and it was here in Seattle. And I remember after the game, Earl talking about having spoken with Ed Reed and that being somebody that he really looked up to. And in some ways, Ed Reed is kind of the best case scenario for Earl, not necessarily the Hall of Fame, because Earl's got a long way to go to reach that point. But in terms of a safety who is able to play into his 30s and still be an incredibly effective player. Baltimore's seen it happen before, and now they're making a pretty big bet on the fact that Earl's going to be able to do what Ed did.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I want to pump the brakes a little bit on doing what Ed did. I know I get caught up in that when, you know, they've brought in different safeties and it's like, oh yeah, they're just going to do what Ed did. Nobody can do what Ed did. You know, that I think the two guys that I've seen in my lifetime that are the greatest safety, strong safety that have ever played, just with their instincts and everything, was Troy Polamalu as a strong safety and a free safety, and Ed Reed. I mean, I think those are generational type players. You just don't have those guys come along. With that said, I do like Earl's game. I think that when it looked at Eric Weddle's game, I think he was a very heads up player, very smart player. But, you know, the physicality was lost at times. And I think that's where, for E.T., he's going to have an opportunity to come in and show that he has, you know, the mental makeup, the savvy to be able to put guys in position. But then, yeah, to make and finish plays when need to be called upon. And now the way it looks with the Browns making a splash with, you know, loading up with Odell Beckham, I think it's just going to be even more of an importance and a stressor on a guy like Earl Thomas to come in for the Ravens and solidify that secondary.
Kadri, how much fun is Lamar Jackson? I know you do pre and post for the team, and man, he, from a distance, this guy is so much fun to watch. What's he bring to this team, and where do you think he's headed as far as a quarterback in the NFL?
I think the sky is the limit, to be perfectly honest with you. I think when he was brought in, originally it was, all right, we're going to let Lamar, you know, kind of wait and see what's going on. Every report out of, you know, the locker room was, man, guy's just a hard worker, very charismatic, love his kind of explosiveness that you see. And with that, you know, you thought you were going to have, you know, Joe Flacco have a great year and off you go. They put guys around Joe. Joe started off hot, but then, you know, kind of fizzled out. And in that fizzling period, in comes Lamar Jackson, and it was hilarious. His first start, it was a 13-play drive for score, and he did not attempt one pass. And I think they did that maybe two or three other times where they did not attempt a pass, and they scored on the drive. But it was one of those cases where normally, you know, you're third and nine, you're thinking, oh boy, here we go. They're just running the football, or he's scrambling around and, you know, getting the first down with his legs, an explosive runner, explosive guy. I think, you know, we all recognize that, you know, there was a blueprint, if you will, from a coaching standpoint and an adjustment standpoint that the Chargers made in the playoffs that ultimately, you know, this team with new offensive coordinator Greg Roman is going to have to figure out how to, you know, help Lamar get better in the passing attack, have more explosive plays. And I think at the same time for Lamar, he has to work on his craft as a throw of the football. You know, he's made some plays, but I think, you know, you've got to go from good to great. And it happens in the offseason by working diligently on your craft.
It's also the fact that they've got Lamar Jackson on a rookie contract is part of the reason they can afford this kind of contract with Earl Thomas. It's a 3-year deal that pays a huge amount of money, but your quarterback is a relative bargain compared to what other teams tend to pay their starting quarterbacks.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it is about the salary cap, and we saw that, you know, with Sam Darnold and, you know, some of the acquisitions that the Jets made, you know, acquiring, for example, C.J. Mosley, probably wouldn't have happened if you had a fat contract. You know, Le'Veon Bell would not have happened if you had a fat contract with your quarterback. But because of it, you get a chance to acquire players. And I think, you know, Eric DaCosta, you know, is smart and recognizing, you know, they need players, but they're not going to, you know, overly kill it. And I think that, you know, they got some guys. Obviously, Earl is one. Mark Ingram is another former Saints running back. It's going to be a case in which if you come at the right price, they're going to obviously pay you, but they're not going to break the bank and put themselves in a tough situation from a salary cap standpoint.
He is Kadri Ismail, part of the Ravens broadcast team there. You're going to enjoy watching Earl, and I'll be real interested to talk to you here in middle of next season and see what you think of Earl and how he compares to kind of the gold standard of safeties at Ed Reed. I think you guys are really going to enjoy him. I'm going to miss watching him play for the Seahawks, even though it was pretty apparent he was leaving. So I guess it's a departing is sweet sorrow for Earl, but you guys are getting a heck of a player there in Baltimore.
We're looking forward to it. I think, you know, this defense has been, you know, what has made Baltimore, Baltimore, the fast, aggressive defense. I think Wink Martindale has done an amazing job of, you know, putting guys in position to succeed, and I think Earl's going to like him, and he's going to like Earl for sure.
Kadri, thanks so much, man.
Appreciate it, guys.
Seems like the world just has fewer colors right now, Dave. Earl Thomas not going to be a Seahawk. It's a reality that I've known. I've thought since his holdout that there's no way he's coming back, and that was before he extended a middle digit. Yet, knowing that he's gone now, I'm a little more disappointed than I expected, than I thought I'd be. I thought I was more ready for this than I am.
I've been ready for it, you know, ever since he said he wasn't going to practice last year. So, you know, the holdouts, all that stuff, you know, same thing with Cam Chancellor. I understand. That's the business side of it. And, you know, you have some leverage there, so you play it. But, you know, once he said that wasn't going to end well with him not practicing, the second he missed a tackle or screwed up, and there was a couple of plays, I'm trying to remember the one where he got lucky, where he jumped something and there was a guy wide open and the quarterback didn't see it. The second that happened, it was going to go south, and, you know, everybody was going to turn on Earl Thomas and especially, you know, his teammates and his coaches.
Now that we see the price, could the Seahawks have paid it? We'll answer that and also have some great sound from Earl Thomas coming up next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore, and Earl Thomas headed to Baltimore. We also got a couple other pieces of news, which is the Seahawks have reportedly re-signed linebacker Michael Kendricks, who was a real boost to them in the games that he did play. Now, unfortunately, he was suspended for half the season for the violations of insider trading, and then was injured after he returned. But the Seahawks are obviously hoping that he's going to be back for the start of training camp. He has a sentencing hearing coming up at the end of April to determine that, and they have added a kicker in Jason Myers, a position that has been up in the air for each of the past two seasons. They went out and signed themselves a Pro Bowl kicker in Jason Myers.
You know, I probably said this within the last 3 or 4 days, but that's one of the three positions in my mind that you don't want to have to worry about. And one of them, the other ones being left tackle and one good cover corner. that you, you know, there's no such thing as a shutdown corner in the NFL, but you want a guy that you're going to be able to leave alone out there and cover a receiver. You want your left tackle, your blindside tackle to be solid and reliable. Seahawks have been very lucky that way. They went from Walter Jones to, you know, Okung, and not directly to, but then now Dwayne Brown. So that's been really good for them. And then they had Sherman, who, you know, look, even when he got beat, remember in the Jets game in 2016, he got beat for a touchdown and I think three catches for 75 yards or so, came back in the second half, and it was Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall only had one catch, and
Sherman had a couple picks.
Sherman picked him off twice. So, you know, that's what I'm talking about at corner. And then the third is, and this excludes quarterback because you're always going to worry about your quarterback, but, you know, the third position in my mind is the kicker. You just don't even, and it's not because of my whole thing that I don't consider them football players. You just want them to be solid like Steven Hauschka was there for a while before the milk turned, Danny. So,
and it did, and we kept sniffing it and worrying. Yeah. It was, but not,
he never got fresher.
He was the one that we could have put back in the fridge, though, the next year because he got good again.
Yeah, which was so weird. And that's why I say, you know, even if they kept Myers last year, it may not have worked out. It's strange how the kicker deal went last year.
At least they're trying something different. They're not going to fail the same way. They're not going on the rebound. They've changed the program. They're not trying to get a guy that's going to bounce back from previous struggles. They're getting a guy coming off at a high point. And another thing that we thought would be funny over the course of the day, this will involve you guys. Text in your favorite memory of Earl Thomas, 710-710, or if there's something that's going to stick in your craw about him forever. But when you think of him, what's your favorite moment? And we're going to play some of the best sound we've gotten from him, and there is quite a lot to choose from.
Earl Thomas is kind of like the Dos Equis guy.
His personality is so magnetic, he can't carry credit cards. His excitement so contagious that they're working on a vaccine. His game is so perfect that the only thing he can raise is the height of his socks.
I think it made me look taller. That's what I got that idea from Cam and Sherm. So that was pretty cool for me to see. I don't know. I've been in practice. I've been kind of having them high. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm kind of superstitious about my gear.
He is the most interesting safety in the world.
That's right. He had observations about the height of his socks all the way down to that. He is a unique, unique person, including talking about explaining they weren't playing horse.
What was the score?
Well, we were just playing not really horse. We were just somebody shoot, and then if I make it, he have to make the same shot. So it was just like a rhythm thing.
Sounds like horse.
That's horse.
Sounds like horse.
Maybe it was pig.
Yeah, could be. He's also, when he was mic'd up, it was unforgettable.
You can't let this game be bigger than you. At the end of the day, I'm going to be sad, but I'm going to leave it all on the field. I'm going to leave it everything I got. I'm going to give you everything I got, bro. Hey, put that on my back. Put it on my back, bro. I'm going to take it still. I told you. They don't make them like us. We're special for a reason. We're not like everybody else. It's so easy when you prepare, dog. Like, that's why I come out here and I can talk to you. I know I'm going to eat, because I know what you're
going to
do.
Should we have a statue, Richard Sherman with the tip and Earl laying on a stretcher with the finger extended? Somebody else brought up another one. What about hugging the official in New Orleans?
Hugging official is a great one.
That's really good.
Didn't he get fined for that?
I believe he did, for contacting.
For contacting an official, yeah. And then he just laughed it off. I'm going to find him talking about that.
Yeah.
By the way, I've been going through this sound for the past half hour, just through the years, and there is a gradual opening up of Earl Thomas's personality that becomes apparent year through year, where the audio gets more and more fun to listen to. And I'm just glad that he was here long enough for us to really get to know him.
Yeah, and there was a couple I know that we can't find, but one was his description of Doug Baldwin when they were talking about the anthem stuff. Not to make light of that, but you remember he was like, yeah, and everything. He was so dramatic. And then there was another time where he was complaining about meetings and film. And I really, that struck a chord with me just because I remember getting so sick of meetings. Like, how many meetings do we have to have? And he was kind of complaining about that, but couldn't be a smarter football player.
I have, this is him talking about hugging the ref.
Everybody keep asking me about, we'll just spare the moment.
Did he laugh at you?
He laughed, but I didn't even know they threw the flag. I didn't know.
Hugged an official.
He would be the guy that would do it.
Do you have a play that stands out? Because I've got one. The play that I will always think of as
the most remarkable thing that I saw him do, and it's weird because it was nullified by a penalty that was a completely hogwash call. In the game against Miami in 2012, would have been November, they ended up losing the game. Earl had a play where he rushed at Tannehill and ended up jumping in the air, and it affected the throw. Bobby Wagner intercepted the ball in the end zone, mm-hmm. and they called roughing the passer, which was completely
terrible,
ridiculous. But the thing about Earl was, when you watched it, and I watched that play at least 30 times, the ground he covered, it just the geometry of it, how fast he was moving, you don't see other guys that play at that speed. He absolutely just tore up the field the way he was able to move. And he wasn't the fastest guy in terms of a 40-yard dash time, but I don't think there was anybody that was ever faster than him on a football field.
Yeah, he took great angles, and he's a player. There's not very many where I have to go back and look, where did he come from? You know, when you rewind it, and it's amazing. It's remarkable to watch. And this is, you know, there are players that have great field speed and not great 40 times, and then there are guys with great 40 times that just don't play that way. You know, it's a waste of speed, and Earl never wasted it. There's a couple of plays, I think I was mentioning, it was kind of funny too, but remember he got the interception in Baltimore, and then he nearly got his head torn off. I think it was a tackle where somebody grabbed his helmet from behind and spun him down to the ground, and he hit the ground hard, and then he got up and did that little Hawaiian ukulele move that he was doing, like he was playing a guitar, you know. And I was like, is that planned, or did that just like happen to pop in his head? You know, the other, I mentioned this a lot in 2017, and I sent you guys a video where he came up and hit a tackle, you know, and he ran up there like 30, 40 yards. And the thing with Earl, I always thought is like, if he's going to run that far, somebody's going to get hit. And he decided to take on an offensive tackle who was like 6'6", you know, 320 pounds and just killed him. So, I mean, there's plays like that. You know, I think the play that best exemplifies his skill is probably, and this is in 2017 after the broken leg, the pick that he got against Houston and returned for a touchdown. And the way he run, he put a move on Deshaun Watson, but the way he was so sure that that was coming there. And I feel like he saw that coming the entire way. And remember before that, he'd gotten kind of fooled a little bit on, I can't remember the name of the receiver who was really fast, but you know, he'd gotten fooled on just a go route that was a touchdown for Houston. And I don't know if it was the next series or two series later where he jumped that crossing pattern. He was sitting back, one of the two deep safeties, and just jumped it. And then his run back was phenomenal, and his speed, like he just ran through everybody. He broke every angle.
It's Danny David Moore. We got the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next.